Welcome to Holistic Matters, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended. Today, we're going to be talking about mechanisms involved in the control and balancing glucose appearance in the body and the ramifications that that has to make sure that progression into issues like inflammation because of loss of glucose control and balance can take place. We're fortunate, again, to be with Dr. Slavko Komarnacki from North Carolina State University and a leading expert and investigator in this whole area of phytonutrients and, in particular, underlying mechanisms of metabolic processes. Dr. Komarnacki, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, John.
All right. So the last time we met on this podcast, we had a chance to talk a little bit about underlying mechanisms and phytoactives, and in that particular case, we were talking about cannabinoids. But today, we're going to make a switch into underlying mechanisms that are influenced by nutrients in general. They could be phytoactives, or they could be classic macronutrients. But the big issue that we've identified that may be contributing to this epidemic of inflammation is the basic concept of loss of glucose control and balance in the body. And when you lose control of glucose management, then that often leads to a progression of inflammation. And the focus of that glucose control are items in the body called bitter receptors.
Right. So it's a very interesting story, because if you think about it, for the most part of the human history, right, our diet was very poor in carbohydrate, right?
Right.
Whatever we could find in nature, there were no, you know, these large apples and big loaves of bread,
right?
Our original food, right, had very little carbohydrate, so our bodies had simple mechanisms to deal with it. Whenever carbohydrate comes into our system, we basically try to absorb and digest it as fast as we can. It's a very cheap source of energy. Our body is very efficient to absorb and process it, right? So we like
right.
it.
Yep.
Whenever it comes into the synthesis, we take it in.
Right.
Right. However, after we discovered crop domestication, agricultural techniques, after we went all over the world and selected the best crops from every single continent, and we were actually able to feed the population that we have on Earth today, all thanks to carbohydrates, right? We run into a different problem. Now we have too many carbohydrates in our diet.
Right,
and our body doesn't really know very well how to manage that influx. So one thing that you have to remember that phytochemicals, for the most part, right, are bitter. Right, lot of phytochemicals which are present in the plant are bitter.
Right,
carbohydrates mostly come to us from plant-based diets. There's no much carbohydrate in meat. There's not much carbohydrate in fish.
Right. Right. Just grains, whole grains
primarily. Most carbohydrates come from the diets, but we don't like bitter diets.
Right.
So what food technology did over the last 50, 100 years is basically selected the cultivars of the crops, selected the special technological processing, which is called debittering in a way, right? So we efficiently keep removing the bitter principles, the bitter phytochemicals from our diet,
right?
And basically processing our food to be palatable for us to enjoy.
Right.
Right. And it's great. I mean, we love it. The problem is that by doing so, we eliminate the bitter signaling, which is present in plant-based food.
Right.
That interacts with our carbohydrate processing.
So is it fair to say then, as diets have shifted, particularly in the last 50 to 60 years, as diets have shifted to less bitter components, better tasting products in our diet, that we've essentially minimized or even deactivated important mechanisms in the body that were really designed to help balance underlying systems.
Right, so this is where the concept of the beta receptors come into play. Our bodies have specialized proteins on the surface of our cells, which are designed to sample the chemicals from the environment, right?
Right.
And transmit that signal inside the cell to tell the cell how to respond to them, right?
Right, right.
So technically they are chemoreceptors,
yeah.
right? They perform bitter tasting function for us in right. our oral cavity, right? Our right. tongue, sure. our cheeks. I mean, we perceive the bitter signaling.
Right.
But they are also present everywhere else in our body, right? If you look at our lung tissue, it's full of beta receptors. If you look at our gut tissue, like the inside of the gastrointestinal tract, it's loaded with a beta receptor. If you look at our erythrocytes, red blood cells, they also have beta receptors. So the question is, why they are so abundant? Why our body keeps beta A receptor on pretty much every single tissue, and specifically on tissues which interact with the environment, our lungs and our guts.
Right. So beta receptors then, if they're in so many places, and particularly the gut, they it seems like they play an important control activation that regulates the uptake of glucose or modulates the rate of uptake of glucose across the cells, cell membranes and barrier walls.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, we have about 25 different functional beta receptors, right? So they're extremely diverse, and they're all slightly different from each other, so they're designed to perceive and get activated by different beta principles,
right?
And I'm pretty sure that a subset of those receptors, was, I guess, through evolution, hijacked by our bodies to perceive and modulate beta signaling in the gut and change the carbohydrate metabolism in response to it.
So originally, I can imagine, I mean, it was probably designed by the great biochemist and mechanistic master in the sky, was designed to help us avoid poisons or toxins in the environment by, caveman. But over time, and again, back to the last 50 or 60 years, if our diet has shifted to fewer bitter compounds in our diet and low-quality grains and carbohydrates, we're not exercising that mechanistic control mechanism. Is that fair also?
Yeah, this is a fair analogy, and I can give you another example, right? So the surface of our lungs, the same way as the surface of our guts, is not sterile, right?
Yeah.
It's exposed to the environment. Right. So it hosts a variety of bacteria, both in our lung tissue and in our guts,
right?
Yet, if you're a healthy person, there is never an inflammatory response induced because those bacteria are there.
Right.
Technically, if you think about it, right, whenever you make a puncture on your skin, you get an instant inflammatory response because there is bacteria there that needs to be killed.
Yep.
Yet you have millions and millions of bacteria in your gut, and your body is perfectly fine with it.
Right.
So one of the molecular processes why that inflammation is being in check, both in our lungs and in our guts, is because the beta receptors, which are present on the surface of these organs, they perceive the beta signaling which is released from bacteria, which tells them to inhibit the inflammatory response. Basically saying, I'm okay to be here.
Don't
attack me.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So it's really very interesting. You know, you mentioned grains, for example, or processing of foods that eliminated bitter compounds. And one of the best examples that I'm aware of are in grains like oats. And so the ancient oats goes back 2,000 or 3,000 years. And if you look at the original strain and the profile of those ancient oats, they had very high levels of protein. They had very high levels of phytoactives called avenathamides that is bitter compound.
Right. So oats have a lot of different classes of phenolic compounds, right? Avenathamides are one of them. And avenathamides are very unique because they are alkaloids in a way, right? They have the nitrogen group present in them, but at the same time, they are the phenolic compounds.
Right.
As many classes of the phenolic compounds, they are perceived as bitter or astringent to us.
Right.
And again, as we cultivated the oats throughout the history, we made it more palatable for us.
Right.
So we removed the bitter taste, which means we removed all the phytochemicals, including avenatamides, from the oats that you can find on the shelf.
Right. So, it's really interesting, back to kind of like the food processing history and observation of our food processing system, and from really from farm into classic food preparation, is that about 30 years ago, maybe longer, 50 years ago in America, there were something like 29 million acres that were used to grow oats. Today, across America, we're growing less than 9 million acres, and 95% of those oats are low in bitter compounds, and they're used primarily for animal feed. So a major source of bitter compounds, or let's call it healthy, quality carbohydrates that had an influence on regulating our mechanisms, we took out of the food stream, out of the diet for us. So if there's a way for us to identify sources of bitter compounds, particularly from good, healthy grains like oats, now we've got a chance to reintroduce it in the diet and help consumers and patients better regulate their glucose balance.
Right. There's a very interesting molecular mechanism behind it, right? So on the surface of the gut cell, the beta receptors, they sit together with the proteins, which is called glucose transporters, which are responsible for the uptake of the glucose, right? Once carbohydrates being digested in our gut, it releases the glucose, and the function of those proteins is to grab the molecule of the glucose in the gut and drag it inside into our body, right? So what we are figuring out in my lab is that there is a very tight coordination because between the activity of the beta receptor and the glucose transporter. If you activate the beta receptor in the gut, it basically transmits the message to the glucose transporter saying, hey, slow down on glucose absorption.
Right.
Right? So these two things work together. The more beta signaling is in the gut, the more beta phytochemicals, beta principles you put into your diet, the slower is absorption of the glucose into the body, which means you have time to manage it better.
Okay. Well, so that's really interesting. So if you look at patient profiles, so, you know, particularly a patient who may be overweight or obese, when you start monitoring their resting blood glucose, it's often observed that over 6, 12, 24 months, that the resting blood glucose goes from 90 to 95 to 100 to about 110, which our own observations would suggest is when you have a resting blood glucose that's somewhere close to 110, then now you're at high risk and it's a result of lack of glucose balance or glucose control. So if it's possible, then in looking at the diet, there's probably no bitter compounds or very low amounts of bitter compounds that that person's taking. You could introduce that into the diet and start to reset the mechanisms to rebalance these glucose transporters through bitter receptor activation.
Right. And it sounds easy, right? In a way, you say just reintroduce the beta receptors and beta compounds into the diet, but it's not that easy to do. You go to a supermarket, all the fruits and vegetables which are on the shelves, they were pre-selected to not contain beta receptors.
Right.
You go to the juice section, all juices are debittered.
Right.
Right? So in a way, you have very limited choices of how doing it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. It's fascinating because what this insight provides us with is a very unique opportunity or a unique mechanism to start strengthening the underlying system that's important in maintaining our health. So as an example, if you take somebody who has lost control of bitter compound or glucose mechanisms and can find a way to introduce it, now you can influence a mechanism rather than manage it by elimination. Right? So if you're diabetic, right, what people will say, we just eat fewer carbohydrates, consume less glucose, or take high fat and high fiber, and that'll slow down the glucose appearance. But if you can put together a structured nutrition program that targets these bitter receptors, now you're influencing a mechanism, and no one's been able to do that before or demonstrate it.
Right. It's a very interesting and unique approach, right? So you're not affecting the carbohydrate intake directly, right? But you are activating another system which helps the body to manage carbohydrate metabolism better.
Right. In your lab, you have developed a very elegant cell culture system looking at the activation of these bitter receptors. So you've tested compounds and looked at comparative analysis of a lot of bitter compounds versus few bitter compounds in a system to look at the response of the bitter receptor. Tell us a little bit about that method and what you found.
Right. So as everything else in science, right, when the problem that you're addressing is very complex, you try to simplify it a little bit by creating a model.
Right.
So instead of working with the entire gastrointestinal system, we take the cells from the gut, which are responsible for the absorption of the glucose. We bring it to the lab and we cultivate them in their artificial medium, right? Where they basically just sit there and they perform exactly the same functions that they do in our guts. Whenever they see glucose, they take it, they grab it, and they transport it inside of the cell.
Right.
So basically, this has become a functional model where you can provide the glucose to the cells, measure how fast they uptake the glucose into their system, and then whether you can develop any other interventions which will slow down that process.
Right.
So there are some chemical dyes which can be loaded into the cells, and they will lighten up in response of the glucose being transported inside the cells.
Right.
So the more glucose crosses the cell membrane, the more light signal is being released, and that light can be measured and quantified, right? So now we have a functional assay, And then we can do anything we want with it. Yeah. We can take the bioactive principles from different crops. We can take chemically synthesized compounds. We can take any kind of functional extracts and apply to the cells, right? And see in which way the activation of the beta receptors in those cells corresponds to the transport of the glucose across the cell membrane.
So what have you found so far? Is there a difference between using, say, oats that have high levels of these bitter compounds versus low levels?
Right. I mean, one of our most interesting findings is that if you take the oats, which you can commonly find on a shelf in a supermarket, and you compare with some other varieties which are rich in phenolic compounds, you see a dramatic difference, right? Hmm. You see that the oats, which has been debittered, right, gives almost no help to the cells to process carbohydrates. Basically, the cells, all they see the glucose and they keep uptaking it without no limitations,
right?
The high phenolic oats do completely different things, right? They basically send a message to the cells through the bitter activation of phenolic compounds saying, slow down the glucose transport, right? And then the cells uptake the glucose slowly, and they have time to metabolize glucose before the next glucose molecule comes in, right? So altogether, it's basically what you do, you delay the absorption of glucose,
right?
And at the same time, you provide the cell or your body with extra time to metabolize it properly.
Right, that's fascinating. So that initial work led to follow-up work, including a range of studies, biological studies to even human trials looking at the consumption of high bitter compounds through oats. Tell us a little bit more about the results of that work.
Right. So, I mean, you have to realize one thing. When we work with foods or dietary supplements or nutritional interventions, we want to make sure that it works at all different levels, right? Understanding molecular mechanism in a cell is often not enough. I mean, it's a great science work, I love it.
Yeah.
But the question is, what happens in real life, right? And for that, there are two different approaches. We can use the animal model, right? So we can take an animal, challenge it with the glucose, provide the beta compounds into their gastrointestinal system and see how they respond. And it's very convenient because with animals, we can measure a lot of things in real life, right? And then, only then, when those nutritional interventions work, when we are sure that the molecular mechanism that we see on a cell culture level works as a function of the whole body, right, we can move this intervention to a classical proof of concept human study where we invite people to the lab. Right. You feed them, let's say if we are taking an example of oats, we feed them the oats which was pretty much debittered, which doesn't have any active bitter principles, versus the high phenolic oats, which has plenty of bitter and astringent taste. And we monitor their blood glucose response in real time, right? So it's a small sensor, you attach it to the skin of the person, it reads your blood glucose levels every 15 minutes for 2 weeks.
Right?
So now we have a two-week window where we can test different nutritional interventions and see what happens if you consume this type of oat, what happens if you consume that type of oat. Right. And what we see is a dramatic difference, about 30% difference in how we absorb and process glucose.
Yeah, wow. So now you're talking about, you know, real possibility to have an impact mechanistically. It's not just like blocking or avoiding. It's really about activating and controlling.
Right. So you not just prevent the absorption of the glucose, right, in the gut, but what you do, you basically trigger another molecular mechanism, which is regulated by the beta receptors, to resolve the inflammation in the gut and promote healthy glucose metabolism.
So, you know, across our industry and when people talk about the issue of nutrition and healthcare, often you'll hear people refer to healthy foods as food as medicine. Now you're really talking about something that really demonstrably can show food is actually supporting in a very healthy way.
Right, and ironically, if you think about it, when you were a child, right, the way you knew things are medicines because they are bitter, right?
Right.
And it's exactly the same principle applied to nutrition, right? Bitter foods are actually good for you.
Right.
They promote digestion, they promote gastrointestinal health, and they promote healthy carbohydrate metabolism.
Right. That's fascinating. So this is a great observation, even a discovery, where now we have an even better chance of being able to manage glucose, and especially for people that are of metabolic syndrome, pre-diabetic and diabetic. Now there's kind of new hope to actually reset the system, not just block it and avoid it again. So that's very exciting work.
It's a very exciting observation, right? I mean, we are still working to understand exactly what's happening at the level of the gut,
right?
You know, because absorption of glucose is one thing, right? What we see is lower inflammatory response in gastrointestinal tissues, which basically means you have a healthier gut system, but we don't know exactly why. So we are trying to figure out, in addition to carbohydrate metabolism, you know, how better principles in our diets affect the inflammatory response in the gut.
So do you think there's some impact beyond the activation of the receptors themselves that these compounds in general, and the bitter compounds specifically, have on digestive function, digestive health and microbiome, barrier protection even? But would you expect to see metabolomic changes in the gut?
I think so, because if you think about it, beta receptors, they are messengers, right? They are not doing anything by themselves. Their job is to recognize the signal, perceive the signal, and transmit the signal to the rest of the cell. There are many other players inside of the cell which recognize that signal and launch every inflammatory response to it.
So the opportunity is great then to be able to take some of these grains, oats, and put them into a structured diet, structured nutrition product, and then start having a therapeutic treatment program that typically could be done in 6 to 12 weeks. But are there other common foods that have bitter compounds that people should also think about beyond a structured nutrition program, just select more bitter compounds? And I guess if the answer to that is a possibility, then I'm going to have to ask you about, are IPA beers important? And the higher the bitter index, the better it is for you, or?
Everything is good in moderation. I would say if you have a choice between non-bitter beer and a bitter beer, go for the bitter one, but don't overdo it.
Yeah, I'm personally a fan of lagers, but anyway, I guess I should develop a taste for bitter IPAs now from this discussion, as well as fine bitter oats.
I know, it's the next step. It's the next step of our research.
Dr. Kumanowski, thanks very much for your time. It's always great to capture new insights with the great leading edge, cutting edge research that you're doing here in North Carolina. Thanks for your time today, and thanks for the great science that you carry out.
Thank you for inviting, John. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.